We present Derek Jacobi as the King and Carolyn Backhouse as Shahrazade in Tales from the Arabian Nights. Episode 2, The Ebony Horse. King Sharia of Persia has taken the beautiful Shahrazade for his bride of a single night. As with those before her, she's destined to meet her end at the hands of the executioner the following dawn, so ensuring that all who consort with the king shall stay faithful forevermore. But on the first day, Shahrazade beguiles the king with a story that lasts beyond the appointed time, so saving her life. Yet, as he reminds her, each day has its dawn, and already the second night approaches.
Lamb is fed with herbs and spices from its birth. The flavour is thus with it for life.
And are we not all thus flavoured, my king?
Not 2 days have I had the pleasure of your company, Shahrazade, yet how well I know that glance. Speak, then.
I was to say that had the lamb been fed with bitterness, the taste would not suit.
And what lesson would you teach me now?
A man is no less made of meat. Should he always feed himself on gall, none will have taste for his later company.
And I say the less life one has lived, the easier to be wise about its workings.
They say your wife was very beautiful. Poets would look on her for inspiration.
She took my very breathing hostage. A slow death, as you see.
She was your only wife.
When a cup is full, only a fool continues to pour.
Why then? Why?
Kill her? Why kill her? Would you like music, perhaps? Or will you tell me another tale? The night is ahead of us, Shahrazade, and I would make of your company a continuing pleasure for us both.
A tale, then, my lord, for our pleasure. In days long since forgotten, there lived a king who, in praise of his benevolence to his people, was promised by an old sage the gift of a wooden horse. It was to be a magical horse, one that could carry a rider high into the sky and could travel the space of a year in a single day. The king was greatly pleased at the prospect, as any might be, and in gratitude pledged the hand of his only daughter, Aisha, to the sage in marriage. But the sage was as old as the princess was young, and was renowned for his ugliness as she for her beauty. And her heart was desperate when she heard of her father's decision, a desperation she could share only with her brother Kamar.
I will go to our father, Aisha. He will understand, I know. He would not wish an only daughter made so wretched.
In his heart, Prince Kamar knew that a king cannot with honour withdraw a pledge. Yet for love of his sister, he could not rest with matters as they were, and so he decided to seek out the old sage, pleading the cause of her rightful liberty.
See how simply I live, good Kamar, by the banks of a river which few visit. A sage is not a demanding man. Modesty is his way, and generosity his mean. I will make your sister an admirable husband.
Good sage, she has no care for you. That's what I've come to say.
She has sent you for this purpose?
I came for myself. She knows nothing of it. I could not live with the thought of her sadness.
Am I to make her sad, then?
It is more the prospect of being robbed of choice that breaks her heart.
Yet it was your father's choice, recall. It would be graceless of me to refuse.
You are a sage. No man would challenge your will.
And if I deny your request?
I shall not leave this place with a refusal, old man.
Tell me, does your father know you come to see me?
It is a matter for you and me alone. Now, offer me courtesy, sir. I would have your answer.
See in the trees yonder? It is the wooden horse I will present your father on my wedding day. It stands still now, yet in it sleeps the endless movement of clouds and journeys yet undreamed. Come, Kamar. Let me show you what your father shall inherit from my hands. I shall give him the magic of flight, as he, in the form of your sister Aisha, will grant me the means of pleasure in my old age. It is but a small creature, mane of cedar and ebony heart, yet it is all things to any man that would mount its back in flight.
It grants wishes, you say?
And more.
To any man?
To any.
Then I will ride your horse, heartless sage. And you will do my bidding in the matter of my sister Aisha.
Well, you are a quick young man. Too quick for an old wretch like me. Fly then, Kamar, brother of my future bride. Fly! Make friends with clouds, good Kamar. Drink only from the rain. No more will your feet touch earth. To fly is what you have asked of this wooden beast, and fly you shall forevermore. Goodbye, goodbye, my noble prince.
And clutching firm the head of the strange steed, his face pressed close against the resined neck, Kamar held tight his breathing as clouds and world rushed by and away. How long he flew, he could not tell. Had a day become a year? A year a life? And when all of his old life seemed finally lost, all at once he heard himself strangely speak.
Beyond the clouds, beyond the dream, there lies the place, the steady stream of light and dark, of joy and woe. The birth of time, all seed to sow.
It was a voice he did not recognize. His he knew, but heard as if by some stranger. And there, for the first time since the curious flight began, the horse's head dipped, its mane like some wooden blade rending the clouds before them. Then Kamar sensed something new. For when everything is lost, a voice always comes to fill the void. It is our own, but of a different kind, speaking for all, about everything. And it was to this voice that the wooden horse had answered, delivering the young prince back to safety and the prospect of a life restored. Reaching earth, Kamar was pitched up and over the horse's head, rolling in the soft grass of a small meadow.
Is this a dream? Do men, horses of wood, fall from the sky? This must be sorcery!
There is no harm here. Please, be assured, I cannot easily explain what you have seen, but if you will touch my hand, you will see it is to flesh and blood you speak.
And as their hands touched, each life entered into the others. Destiny, long since sleeping in their blood, now began to dream.
See, I am as real as you. My name is Kamar al-Akmar, the son of King Sabur.
This I can hardly believe. I am the Princess Shams, and my father and I are preparing to travel to the wedding of your sister this very day. Are you sent to guide us, then?
To whom is my sister betrothed? Tell me, please.
You ask this of me? You do not know of your own sister's wedding to the sage?
It has been forced upon her. I must do all in my power to prevent it.
My father is a just man. Perhaps he might help.
Just or no, he is still a father and will understand the position in which my own has placed himself. For a king, a pledge must always stand. No, I think not, fathers.
What then shall we do?
We. The very word made his head spin. The woman in whose eyes he was fast drowning smiled softly back and knew. Astride the wooden horse, Kamar and Shams followed the way of the clouds back down the path of night to his father's castle. For now they had a plan to save Aisha from her fate and in so doing make celebration for the sudden happiness of their meeting.
My father is to arrive later, O sage.
Ah.
But he instructs me, as his only daughter, to bring you the greetings of our house and the wish for your future happiness with the Princess Aisha.
It is gracious of him, Princess Shams. In worldly terms, I am a humble man, as you perhaps have heard. But true greatness is a matter of heart and mind.
Your reputation stretches to the distant corners of the kingdom, O sage. It is said it is your skill in the magical arts that has earned you the hand of the Princess Aisha.
It is wrongly said, then. In me, the princess sees a genuine nuptial hope, as any woman might.
Oh, I meant no offence, of course.
Oh, it's... I could never be offended by such beauty.
Please, I came to ask of you a favour, sir. Mm-hmm. As you're about to gain your heart's gladness in the company of another, I, for my part, am troubled by the attentions of someone altogether unsuitable. Great sage, I need a spell. One that will put distaste in his mind for me, so making him wish that we should go our separate ways, never again to meet. Will you do this for me?
His name? Give me his name, and I will do the task.
His name must stay a secret. But if you would vouchsafe the spell, the magic would work for all, would it not? And against any?
Indeed. Magic is a universal power and cannot be bound to one person's control. Therein lies its true force. There is a mirror in my possession, small, but of great potency. Cast the reflection of a face across its surface, and instantly there is gained the ability to command that person's mind and heart.
And you will give me this mirror? Is this what you suggest?
If so, what shall you do in return? What give to me?
I would not disgrace you with suggestions of reward, sir. As all know, A worthy sage gives solely in response to others' needs.
Your skin is as pearl. Would you deny me that?
You ask too much.
I have said my price. I do not bargain.
Then I must decline.
Oh, you are right, and I wrong. See, you make me shamed in my own sight. Princess Shams, can you forgive the weakness of an old and foolish man?
We will speak no more of it. The eve of your wedding is no time for blame.
Your generosity exceeds your beauty. And you shall have your gift, your mirror of magic. No more will your admirer torment you, for once his face falls across the glass, he will want the sight of you no longer. Keep it tight to your breast, little one, for I would not want my own features reflected therein.
Where is the mirror, sir?
Through the door is a small room, and in that room is an ivory table. In a casket on that table, wrapped in the finest silk, you will find what you seek. No, child, the door behind.
I hope what I do is right, sir. Against my admirer, that is.
Oh, it is. It is, my sweet child. It is the only thing to do, believe me.
In the casket, then. There is little light here, good sage. I see no table.
Move forward, slowly. Trust the dark, my child. It will not harm you.
To left or right?
Either. All direction arrives at the same place. You will live there until I am ready for you, young princess. Safe within the very fabric of the castle that I shall one day inherit. Your cries will be heard as but the creak of rafters, your tears seen as dampness from the plaster between stones. Did you think you could defeat a sage with such tricks? I will marry the princess and keep you for my later pleasure.
And through the imagined doorway, into the walls themselves, vanished the life of the young princess. Where once was sense and purpose, now only darkness reigned, lending strange sinew to lime and stone, running frantic down granite veins, hands clenched on dust alone. The castle became her living crypt. Meanwhile, Prince Kamar, waiting in vain for her return, knew he would have to face the sage again, rescuing both his sister and Shams.
My son, I have little doubt that that is what you believe. Indeed, I have had such dreams myself, some from which I was loath to wake. However...
But, Father, I have said this was no dream.
Then explain to me how it is that all these adventures befell you since we last met 1 hour before noon.
But that cannot be. I have been absent months, years even.
In your dream, certainly. And Princess Shams, if she were here in the castle, as you say, why can she not be found? No one has left since the time you say she entered. Even the venerable sage, with all his wisdom, has told me no such person exists within these walls.
She is somewhere... somewhere near. It is just that I cannot reach her.
Kamar's heart was heavy with confusion. The sage had again triumphed, that he knew. But by what means remained a mystery? Had it all been dream, as his father claimed?
If so, his search for Shams was no more than a journey through his own heart's wanderings.
A servant saw her come to this very room.
And no doubt another could be found that would claim he saw her leave. I do not say the Princess Shams did not visit the castle, only that she was not seen by me. However, there is a way we might find her.
What is this way?
You have searched the castle, you say?
I have told you she is nowhere to be found.
Then magic only must be our guide.
I do not trust your magic, sage. The ebony horse was magic, remember?
And are you then not safely returned to your father's house? Did actual harm befall you?
What is this magic that will find her?
In the room to which the door behind you leads is a small table on which there sits a casket. Within that casket, sir, is a mirror clearer than mountain water, and in it you will see the place where the Princess Shams now rests.
Then why have you not done this?
It is the eye that looks that gives the answer. You have the sight born of love. You alone can see truly in this matter.
This door?
The very one. Go forward, sir. There is everything to gain. Believe me.
No!
I heard a sound.
The wind no more.
It was as if...
The horse! Ebony horse!
I shall find her, but with the help of a better friend than you!
On the far side of a forest clearing, stabled amidst sycamore and oak, the wooden horse awaited his return. Kamar caught the now familiar look of ebony eye, the misted cedar flanks, and all at once knew this was his final hope. Only the ebony horse had known the way he needed to take, first in the finding of Shams, and then the return to free his sister. Once again, the remembered words lived fiercely in his head.
Beyond the clouds, beyond the dream, there lies the place, the steady stream of light and dark, of joy and woe, the birth of time, all seed to sow.
And from the words suddenly sprang the old vision. The first scattered sands of the sleeping cause.
Take me where you will, noble horse, for I now trust all that you are. But wherever it may be, let the Princess Shams dwell there too, for I no longer wish life if it be separate from her.
And up and beyond, down and within, the horse and rider flew, circling and spinning, until the castle swam into sight. Then the horse's head faltered and dipped, a swift descent that suddenly told Kamar the fate determined. The great stone walls rose ahead, the breaking of his life against them now the certain end. The Princess Shams was gone forever. And against the looming stone of his father's castle, the ebony horse would faithfully fulfill his command, taking from Kamar his worldly life, reuniting him with Shams in the safer place to come. But as the horse with wall would meet, all at once the stone and mortar flew apart. And in their place there seemed an opening in the sky, a moving path between the pillars of clouds. A moment, as Kamar saw the sage's shape, the twisted rage across his face, and then the figure scattered with the breaking of the stone. Then Princess Shams beside him, laughing, released from binding walls, clutching at the wooden mane they tightly held between their now locked hands.
We fly, Kamar. We fly.
To each again. A gift of clouds.
And in each other's gaze, they saw all there was to see. The looking at the clouds was the clouds. The love for one another, the feeling love had for them both. And as the ebony horse climbed even higher, the short life they had known together seemed stranger still. Had the sage and the castle been but dream? Or was the flight of the wooden horse something to be questioned further? The sun grew ever rounder, making small the sky. And then, at a moment, there was no usual seeing left.
There was a time when whatever I thought or felt was as if in flight. I had around me only air and a strange passage of wings. Then, for a short space, I awoke and found I was quite myself again, arms, legs, face. Now I cannot be sure whether I was then a man dreaming he was in flight, or whether I am now flight itself, dreaming it is a man.
A curious tale. Did each then dream the other?
It might be so.
Then where can be the meaning in it all?
All must ride the wooden horse in turn.
A king need not.
You have a heart that denies itself. Only when a wound is open is it free to heal. Kamar and Shams opened themselves to the all and so found freedom. You seek safety and so are bound.
This is what you see in me?
I see a man that does as others bid him.
Then you see wrong. Your life is in my hand because I put it there, and I shall close my fist about it for reasons solely of my own.
You are in thrall to what others expect of you. You kill me to appease them. Where then is your choice? I ride the horse of Dream Lord. Given leave, thoughts too have wings. Only then can they see the rightful shape of things.
And are those shapes good?
Good or no, my lord, they are all we ever know.
The Ebony Horse was the second in the series of Tales from the Arabian Nights, dramatised from traditional sources by Colin Hayden Evans. The King was Derek Jacobi and Shahrazad Carolyn Backhouse. Kamar was James Telfer, his father John Baddeley, Shams Teresa Gallagher and the sage Roger Hume. The music was composed by Sue Harris and played by Sue Harris and Stephen Hannigan. The series was directed at Pebble Mill by Nigel Bryant.